That's a nice way to start out the show. This is Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM from Vancouver, the radio show about comics. I'm joined this week by my good friend, Jordan Beauchamp.
Bonjour.
And this week, we are going to be talking to Farrell Dalrymple. I hope I pronounced the name properly. I am known for mispronouncing names even several different ways in the same interview and being chided thoroughly for it. So, do I have you there, Farrell?
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. So how do you pronounce your name? Did I get it right?
It sounded good. I wasn't... you said Dalrymple, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
What is the origin of that last name?
Oh, I think it's like Scottish or like English or something like that.
Wow, I would have guessed Dutch.
Oh. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like Scottish, but... I mean, I'm not 100% sure.
I thought if it was Dutch, it would probably be pronounced Dalrymple, but...
or Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, that's a good way for people to remember it, is Rumpelstiltskin.
Now, the reason... I'll just completely change topic now, so we don't go into childhood traumatic...
You don't want an in-depth discussion.
Of Rumpelstiltskin?
Yeah.
You are coming to town in about a week and a half for the Comics and Stories Convention in Vancouver Heritage Hall. And
I'm super excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. This is gonna be your first time in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, I guess we'll first start out letting people know the work that you've done. Pop Gun War is your, I guess, your epic. Is epic a good way of putting it? Your epic universe.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, I have like plans for that story to like, you know, or like some kind of form of it to keep going on for a while. So yeah, that would be a good way to describe it.
Well, I've got a whole bunch of questions about Pop Gun War because you have such a array of things in all these different anthologies, but they seem to touch together. But I'm going to get into that later. First, I want to kind of ask about a little bit of biographical background on you, and also, I guess let's start out with where'd you come from? Maybe a little talk about Meet Haas. Is it Haas?
Oh, we just say house. Yeah. I don't know if there's like a, like if the spelling is correct, just the way it's pronounced or anything, but we just call it Meet Haas. We just thought it would be funny to spell it weird.
Well, the spelling would be, I think, Haas.
Yeah.
Because of Bauhaus, the art movement. And
I didn't know there was going to be so much like talk about like language and pronunciation.
You're just trying to have fun. So where did you... Now, you guys all met in art school, am I correct?
Yeah. Well, most of us. The first group of guys, it was pretty much everyone that I went to school with, and there might have been, like, one or two other guys. I think one of the guys I worked with at a restaurant in New York at the time, and he did comics, and we got to talking. I was like, I'm doing this thing. We're doing this thing if you want to be part of it. So I think, but yeah, it was mostly art school guys from the School of Visual Arts.
That's where I thought you went. And did you learn from some of the greats there?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, I had some good teachers. Walt Simonson was one of my teachers.
Oh, neat.
the Marvel comic guy that did
the Thor
and Star Slammers and all those cool things.
Beta Ray Bill.
Yes. Yeah, he mentioned a couple times that he invented Beta Ray Bill. Like which was awesome. I mean, he'd be in class and it's like, you know, a while ago I invented this character, Beta Ray Bill. Like, we know. That's awesome. I mean, I wasn't saying like in a way of like, oh, like we don't want to hear about it. You're amazing. That's so cool.
His Manhunter stuff he did with Archie Goodwin back in the 70s is... some stellar pieces of all-time comics goodness.
That was like some of his first comic work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as stylized as his later stuff, which it's probably why I prefer it more, I think, but it's, you know, Archie Goodwin writing it and stuff, so it's a good piece of work. I recommend checking it out. So what kind of, like, when you sort of go into the School of Visual Arts, did you have in mind that you wanted to do comics?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I pretty much, like, have wanted to do comics since I was a little kid. I think when I was going to school, when I was about to go to school, I had kind of gotten into painting a little bit. So I was thinking I was going to be like a fine artist, which seems completely ridiculous to me now. But when I was going to school, I was like, I wonder if I should go into the fine arts department or if I should go into the illustration department. And I wasn't really considering like taking cartooning as like a major, just because I don't know. I didn't really feel like that someone could teach me how to do comic books. I don't know if that's like, you know, egotistical or something. I just couldn't really see going to school for that,
mm-hmm.
whatever reason. But I thought, like, you know, the illustration, that I'd get like a kind of like a good, you know, I sort of see School of Visual Arts as kind of like a glorified trade school. Which is, you know, it's not a bad thing. Like, that's kind of what I wanted out of it. You know, I wanted to learn how to draw and paint, and I think
it was just basically learning a lot of the techniques and things.
Yeah, yeah, like kind of like the craft of, you know, making a picture, an image. You know, it's like the cartooning thing. I mean, I think that it's probably good. You know, like the teachers there, it's for like teaching storytelling and different things like that. But it was kind of something I sort of wanted to figure out on my own, like how to tell a story. I sort of felt like that I kind of had like I didn't need as much help in that department. Like, I felt kind of like I kind of had that. It might have just been my youthful overconfidence or something, but yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it would be better for me to like take painting classes and drawing classes, and I think I made the right decision, because at the time I was there, like, a lot of the cartooning department wasn't, like, the best thing. It wasn't, like, the golden years of the cartooning department.
Back in the 70s?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like back in the 70s they had, like, you know, Will Eisner was teaching there, and
yeah, I think
Art Spiegelman, and
well, I think Spiegelman's back there again.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've gotten emails from students of his, so...
Oh, okay.
Letting me know about it. Yeah, I
think like the new administrator or the new head of the illustration program. He pretty much like revamped the whole cartooning department and put like a lot of like good guys. So it's probably like really good again. But like at the time I was going there, it was like, you know, mostly staffed by like a bunch of dudes who worked at DC and stuff. Which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I kind of, you know, I wasn't as interested in that back then. You know, like working for, you know, a major comic company or anything.
Was a lot of your interest growing up more of the alternative, was it like during the black and white craze of the 80s? Like a lot of the stuff
no,
you're getting
I mean,
into?
I was pretty much raised on like reading Marvel comics. But I think by the time I got into art school, I was a little older. I was like 23, I think, when I went there. I wasn't interested in superhero comics anymore, and I hadn't really been introduced to like a lot of underground or alternative stuff. So I was just kind of like, I know I like comics, but there wasn't really a lot that I, you know, I would never go to the comic store and pick up like new issues or anything. I would just kind of like look at the old ones I had, or occasionally if someone would give me one or show me one that I should get, you know, I'd pick that up. But I mostly looked at a lot of like illustrators and, you know, like children's book artists and stuff like that around then.
Well, you definitely see, like, in the original issues of Pop Gun War, all of the very painterly covers that you have. You can definitely see that interest in kind of bridging out from, rather than just the pen and ink, you have the painting there as well.
Cool, yeah, thanks. I mean, that's what I was, you know, I was trying to, I guess, when I was doing those, I mean, I did them all that, it feels like it's so long ago now, but, yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping to, like, bring, you know, things from outside of comics into my comics. I don't know if that sounds too pretentious or something, but...
No, well, it's bringing in, I guess, bringing different aspects and working them together.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I don't know, especially with that first issue, like, I was experimenting a lot. Like, I was just kind of trying to figure out how to ink. Like, I'd done one other book in college, and then I was doing a lot of stuff, like, you know, I was using like a toothbrush and, you know, different things, chopsticks and different, you know,
a toothbrush.
I think there's even like some Zip-A-Tone and things in that first issue that I didn't you know, all the successive issues, I just pretty much, you know, used a brush.
Now, did you, when putting together the collection, did you kind of touch up any of the old stuff? Because you're saying you really experimented more, or like were trying out different things with the first issue. Or is it pretty much verbatim how it was originally printed?
Yeah, it's pretty much. I mean, I think there's might be like a typo or two fixed. I think actually with the collection, there was actually two word balloons that were left out because I screwed up. I when I gave them the files, I gave them like the original files that I had, and I think like right before the book we had went to the first issue had went to press, I had added a couple of. I added a couple of things, like song lyrics that Emily would sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the Annie Nesenti, a writer, to do a foreword for the collection. And so it was weird that she, I guess, liked those lines that were there that I had added and mentioned it in her foreword. But when the book went to press, I gave them, like, the old page, the original page. It didn't have those on there, so... Someone pointed out to me, and was like, what is this she's referencing? I don't see it in the book anywhere.
Aww.
I was like, what? Oh, no. But I added it for the reprint. I fixed it.
And it's just been recently reprinted from Dark Horse as a new edition, I guess? Or is it pretty much, other than the word balloons, the same cover?
Yeah, it was like I said, it was some typos here and there and different things. I think like the back page, I changed a lot of the...
It was the first issue of Pop. Actually, I want to go a little further back because it seems like all your stuff is really interconnected. Before you started Popgun War, you're talking about like when you're going into the SVA, you kind of knew what you wanted to do. Did you kind of like have a world in mind that you wanted to start creating, or is it just kind of developed through itself?
It's kind of evolved. I mean, as far as like. I mean, I didn't have, like, this grand scheme in mind of, like, going on forever or anything. Like, I was just kind of wanting to do, like, issues of it, you know, here and there. And I wasn't thinking, like, super far into the future. It was more of, like, when I started making it, it was kind of out of frustration. I, you know, would go to the comic book store and it's like, oh, man, I don't really like, you know, any of the comics here, most of the comics here. Like, this is, like, what I want out of a comic book. And then, you know, I kind of just sat down and made, like, kind of what I would like to, I guess, read. But looking back on it now, it's kind of embarrassing. Some of it is like, oh, no, you know, why did I write that or why did I draw that? But I don't know, I have this affection for things that I've created, I guess, and want to keep seeing them in stories and things for the most part. And I think it's just, yeah, it's kind of like naturally progressed. You know, I'll think of a story idea, and I'm like, oh, wait, I could have this character that appeared in this one panel be like the main guy in this or something. You know, like I kind of like, I used to read these books by Madeleine L'Engle when I was a youngster, and like her books would always do that. Like they would have characters from each other's, from different stories, like appear in different parts in different books and things. And I was like, wow, I really like that. I want to do that with my stuff. So I guess now I'm kind of more like, I'm thinking more of like a world, you know, like doing some world building type stuff. But I think back when I started, it was just like, I will draw a little boy with wings. A guy in a top hat and a fish with glasses, which I kind of killed those last two characters off because I was sick of them. So.
Spoiler if anyone hasn't read it yet and is thinking
about it. Oh, yeah, sorry. We'll see.
But I think there's this even theme of it, attention, or maybe even this adolescent kind of awkwardness that runs throughout your work. And I think it even comes out in your comic in Superior about that kid named Hollis. And do you think that comes from your own childhood at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, most of the ideas I get are probably from... you know, I don't know exactly the age group it would be, but, you know, from my adolescence, like, I for some reason, like, when I'm thinking of stories, I draw from that, you know, point in my life a lot, like, when I was a little kid. And I think I'm just, there's something I was kind of fascinated with about the perceptions that children have of, mm-hmm. things being, well, I can't speak for anyone else, but the perceptions I had as a child of, like, things being really unfair and unjust, and, you know, I don't know, if I picked on a little bit here and there. It probably wasn't as bad as, like, I remember it being. Like, I'm sure, like, a lot of the kids had, you know, worse things, you know, much, much worse things happened to them. But, yeah. You know, at the time, it was always, like, everything was, like, a tragedy. And I kind of like that, you know, that sort of weird sadness that, you know, kids experience, you know, when someone calls them a name or, you know, pushes them down or something like that. And it's kind of like how deeply that would have, you know, affect some kids.
Your work definitely has the feeling that you study people very closely. I mean, there's almost a familiarity with some of your characters. Like, you felt like when reading, you've almost seen these people before on the street.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Pop and War especially, it was, I would put a lot of my frustrations in there about living in that city. It's just a super intense place to live, and especially for, I mean, I'm kind of a social guy sometimes, but, you know, like, you know, if I'm going somewhere or doing something, a lot of times I'm very focused on it and just kind of want to be left alone, and that city doesn't really let you do that. It's kind of in your face constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I, you know, like, a lot of people, you know, just kind of, like, keep their eyes on the ground and try to ignore it and stuff. But, I don't know, like, it was just, like, you know, walking out the door and then going to get some coffee. There was, like, some kind of crazy thing that was going on the way there or the way back or something. And I tried to put that, you know, some of the things that I experienced into my comics. Like, even, I think in the, was it, like, the third issue? I don't know. It was one of the issues of Pop and War. This guy's, like, yelling at this group of kids, you know, and saying, like, you know, you trash my city, I'll trash you or something. But it was, like, based on this dude that I would see in Williamsburg, Brooklyn a lot. Like, he would just yell at, like, people walking past him. And, like, he'd be walking around and someone would walk past him, and I guess they'd get too close to him or something, and he'd just be like, young people, and just start screaming about young people.
Those kids these days.
And then I guess someone threw some trash on the ground or something, and then he started to, like, yell about, like, well, he didn't use the word trash. He used the, I don't know, can I say a swear word on the show?
Listener discretion, be advised.
Well, you just say, you shit on my city, I'll shit on you. And I was like, oh, that's great. So I put that guy in there, but I didn't put the S word in Pop and War, because I kind of wanted to keep that comic a little more, I don't know, I wanted kids to be able to enjoy it as much as, like, adults, hopefully.
Well, because it's from Sinclair's point of view in many respects, so I think you can have that sort of breaking of innocence, because he's such an innocent character.
Yeah, he's a sweet kid. Yeah, I think in the book that I'm doing now with him, he's a little more sassy. Mm. I don't know if it's, like, being in that city, you know, or what, but he doesn't take crap like the way I have this other character that I use a lot, Smith, that he seems to get kind of run over a lot.
That's the character in the Super Mundane?
Yeah, I did that with him, and then that was a book I did in college, in Will Simonson's class, partly in Harrison's class. And, he's a little more, like, just sort of a quiet guy that sort of, like, takes what people dish out to him and, you know, looks confused and but Sinclair is, like, a little, I don't know, I like things a little more, like, I guess because he has, like, you know, some wings and he can fly away from stuff, it's like he just feels a little more enabled or what, but he doesn't take people's crap the same way.
He seems like he's more involved in what's around him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not just standing there, you know, wide-eyed and dumb, like, staring. Yeah, he's a little more, yeah, exactly, involved.
I think I can do a quick music break. Okay. What would you like me to play? Because we got the music that you sent me.
I don't know. Surprise me.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Bright Lights.
Sweet.
Okay. This is Inkstud CITR 101.9 FM. We're talking to Farrell Dalrymple, and we shall be back. Wow, that was loud first coming on. I'm sorry for listeners. And I'm wearing headphones, so it came on here pretty hard. So I'm sure I felt it as strong as anyone else. This is Inkstud CITR 101.9 FM. We're talking to Farrell Dalrymple, who will be in town on Sunday the 26th, I think it is, at Heritage Hall Comic Stories Comic Con. Be joined by many of Vancouver's best and brightest, including my co-host for the day, Jordan, will be there selling her wares. Brandon Graham, another Meat House luminary, will be coming up to, you know, sell those comics that he does and his wonderness that is Mr. Graham, who is actually a regular guest up in Vancouver. And we're happy that you will be joining us, Mr. Dalrymple.
I've never been before. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It's I think, you know, it's kind of suiting because last year we had James Jean on, who is another member of the Meat House crew, and we actually had him on the show before the con to kind of help promote and, you know, talk to James about his volume of covers. I want to see more comics by him, but I know that'll never happen. The Meat House book, which book is this? Book 8. Your latest, the Meat House endeavor.
Oh, Head Games, yeah. Volume 8.
There was a lot that went into that, I understand.
Oh, wait, the one that's going to be coming out?
The one that is. The one that came out last fall, the Head Games. The one that you, I guess you edited?
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much me. I was like, I didn't know what I was in for. Like, I mean, I kind of, you know, with all the books, like, I had a hand in, you know, it was sort of like a group effort, but it seemed like a lot with that last issue. It was, you know, I kind of did most, like, production and stuff, and that's why there's, like, a lot of mistakes and typos and things in it, even though I got it, like, proofread by two different people. It's, yeah, it was a lot of work.
Well, I haven't noticed any typos, so we'll pretend they're not there.
Don't tell anyone.
Now, it's too
bad. We're not on the radio.
Just rewind and ignore what you just heard, people. Now, did you basically for this, you kind of were able to like bring in the people that you really like as cartoonists and just you know, have them in the fold for this latest Meat House collection?
Well, it was mostly like the dudes that had been in like, you know, those successes in the previous issues or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I like all their stuff. Like, the guys in Meat House are like my favorite guys doing comics, pretty much. Like you mentioned, you know, Brandon and James, and man, both of those guys, I love their stuff. They're awesome.
Yeah, King City is one of the strongest releases in the last while. Brandon's
book. Yeah, it was great. Have you read the new one, Multiple Warheads?
Yes, I have. It was fantastic. My favorite thing at the end, the taxi driver, in order to please a woman, you must have multiple warheads.
Yeah, I think he actually heard that from a cab driver.
Yeah. No, that's that was the it said at the back. He got the name from a cab driver. So, no, it's a fantastic book. And your stuff is fantastic now. Meat House, so many of your stories, they all connect into the Pop Gun War. Like, I've only got, I think the oldest Meat House I have is number 4. And I have all of them up till that. And also the story in the Superior Showcase. Also kind of, or Project Superior. Kind of takes place in that same kind of universe. Is there any plan to try and collect them all as part of like that ongoing serial?
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably do like you know, like an anthology collection or something, or like a, you know, all of my short stories that I've done for Meat House and other things in like a in one big volume. But I kind of am waiting to put a couple more books out first. I'm working on another Popcorn War book, and then I have a plan for another story that will have the Hollis character from that Project Superior story in it. So, but yeah, after that, I think I'm probably going to put like a book of all my short stories, and then maybe a sketchbook too.
And that's
maybe around the same time.
That's something I quite enjoy is you have, you're pretty open with your whole sketchbook process. I've noticed like your online, your live journal, you show that off to a lot of people for people to kind of just check out. And is that your main way of doing character development and kind of working at your craft?
Yeah. I pretty much like do all my writing thinking in my sketchbook, and then later I'll transfer it to, like, you know, a Word document or something and use that as, like, a script. Like, I'll take little portions that I've written here and there and kind of put it all together. Yeah, the live journal thing, I haven't really updated it too frequently. It's kind of like every few months I'll put something, or I intend to do put stuff up there, but the internet is such a distraction. It's like hard to, hard for me to, like, get down with it these days. I'm kind of like,
when you do put something up, it's pretty huge. You put up, like, so much work, and it's all just incredible. It sounded really fangirly.
Just giggle now. Now, when I was at SPX, you were selling originals from the, what you, I noticed I, they were familiar because they'd post them on the live journal. Are you going to have original pages available for purchase at Comics and Stories?
Sure, yeah. I'll bring all the stuff that I have. I'll bring all the crap that I have. People can look at it or whatever. I usually bring original art to shows, but I don't always, like, put it on the table. I haven't been to a comic show in a while. I mean, I was just in San Diego, but I haven't had, like, a comic.
Your own table and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I guess at SPX, it was kind of like a whole group of you sharing the same table, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I usually have original artwork with me. It's just been like a portfolio, like, underneath the table, and if someone asks me about it, I'm like, all right, sure. Do you want any of this stuff? Gotta get rid of it. Man, it's cheap.
One thing I've really, one of my favorite parts about your work is your color stuff.
Oh, thanks.
When you do that, what kind of format do you do the coloring in?
I just use these, those little children's watercolor sets. Pretty much. Like, I'll buy, like, you know, or one of those things that has, like, a little 8 or 10, whatever, little wells that you can buy at, like, a dollar store or something, or, like, you know, in the little kids section or the cheap art supply section of the art store or the craft store. And I don't know, I think I just was messing around with those one day, and I'm like, hey, this is pretty easy, and I just, for some reason, never got any, like, I just keep buying those and haven't really bought, like, any fancy paints or anything. But, I seem to get, like, decent results out of using those, so I guess I'll stick with it for the time being.
But I
mess with it a little bit in Photoshop too, but not much. It's mostly just watercolor.
And then you also get Mr. Paul Hornschmeyer. Like,
mm-hmm.
I hope I pronounce. Yeah, he does a lot of your coloring work too, I understand, like for the story in the Bizarro anthology, the second one.
Yep.
And he's
doing the Omega coloring too.
Which I guess we should probably talk about, since that's your next big piece of work, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're more about the indie stuff here, but I mean, it's your work, so let's chat about what is Omega the Unknown.
We'll talk about my Marvel project. No, I'm really excited about it. It's gonna be really cool, I think. I'm 8 issues done with it, pretty much. So I got like 2 issues left to go, and I'm working with this really amazing writer, and Paul's a great colorist, and Marvel's been super cool with everything that we wanted to do with it. So hopefully people will like it. I think the most fans of, like, a typical Marvel comic, I don't know if they'll know what to make of it at first or if they'll go for it, but you know, I don't know, maybe we'll draw some new readership from outside the mainstream or something.
Are you still being pretty stylized in it, or are you having to subdue it at all?
I didn't really, like, consciously change my style or anything. It's pretty much, like, the way I draw, or if it's changed at all, it's just been kind of like a you know, more natural progression. Some people have mentioned that my stuff's gotten more cartoony. So, that might, you know, be, you know, some other people might perceive that, too, looking at it. But I think the biggest difference is that, like, with Poppin' Word, that stuff seems a little more illustrative. Like, when I write that book, I'm very aware of, like, okay, I want to leave, like, a lot of space on this page so I can just, you know, kind of have fun doing maybe like a bigger drawing. But with the Omega stuff, maybe it's because he's a Jonathan Lethem, the writer. He's a prose writer. This is the first comic book work he's done. So he writes like these really intensive, detailed scripts, which are awesome. But it's kind of made me rethink the way I approach storytelling stuff. And it's pushed me in some cool ways, I think. I started drawing really small because you're going to fit everything in panels, and I like the way it looks a lot. So I don't know, some people might notice that. Like, oh, there's so much tiny little stuff going on in each panel.
There's a lot more detail to it.
Yeah.
What kind of utensils are you using right now for your drawing? Like, we talked a little bit about the coloring work.
Yeah, weapon of choice.
Well, I mostly use a brush when I ink. But lately I've been using a lot of Micron pens, which is, I guess, pretty tacky, but I don't know.
Well, it sometimes really looks
fun to work with my sketchbook, so I just started kind of using them to get, because I'm, you know, doing so much little detailed stuff, it's like, oh, I'll just grab, like, a really tiny Micron pen and fill a lot of the stuff, and no one's going to notice the difference. And then, you know, I end up, like, using it a lot for, like, other parts of the page and then kind of making myself get my brush out again, go to town with that. Just switching it up a little bit here and there.
So you
mostly brush and Micron pens.
You use a lot of brush? It sometimes looks like you almost use, like, a nib pen or something like that, but I guess just know what
I haven't
you're doing.
Used a nib since, like, the first issue of Popcorn War.
Oh, yeah?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I used mostly brush for that, too, but I think I used, like, some nib pens. And I never had much luck with those. Like, they would just, I couldn't get the hang of it. I'd always leave splatters and blotches, and they'd always get really crummy, and I couldn't keep them clean properly, and it was just a pain in the ass. So I decided, you know, I'm just going to, use these little archival acid-free things that I'm holding in my hand right now, actually.
We're a good show to draw, too. I'm going to do another quick music break. Any requests, or should I just play it random?
Play that Ariel Pink song.
Alrighty. This is Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. We are talking to Harold Dalrymple, and we will be back. Hopefully this song doesn't crank as loud as the last one when I first started.
I'm not gonna try.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show. I totally forgot to actually mention the music we played so far in the show, so I should mention it. We started with When You Sleep by My Bloody Valentine from the classic Loveless album that was at the beginning of the hour, and one of the best albums of all time.
Yes.
Followed up by, at the 25-minute point, I Have Feelings That I Haven't Had for a While by The Bright Lights, and that was just interesting results. By Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti off of the album House Arrest. Next week, my guests will be Chris Ware and Jeet here, where we will be discussing Frank King and the wonderful world of Gasoline Alley. I'm very excited. And I don't know what I'm going to do after that. I've totally, like, just dropped the ball and haven't been doing any, like, coordinating, but I should set up the next bunch of shows. But today we're joined by Mr. Farrell Dalrymple discussing Pop Gun War. Meat House. Is Omega the Unknown? Is that the right name?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And more. So your music choice. What's about those songs that you enjoy?
The last song, the Ariel Pink song?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that whole album, I heard it, like, about, like, 6 months ago or something. I can't remember where, but... that whole album is amazing, I think.
It's got, like, a great, like, 60s Britpop feeling to it, it sounds like.
But like, that song in particular, I really enjoy, just because he's just, like, singing about, like, how, like, what a, like, great artist he is, sort of. Just, you know, talking about, like, every time he picks up a pen, he gets, you know, something cool, you know, something cool happens. And, like, that's a really good attitude to have. I like that.
Now, Pop Gun War, the collection came out 4 years ago, and now you've been talking about the next Pop Gun War stuff. I think we want to know.
When does it come out? When does the next stuff come out?
Hopefully after, you know, maybe like a few months after Omega is done, but don't quote me on that.
So that'll be about a year.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping Pop Gun War will come out like sometime next year. But I've been saying that for a few years now. It's been a little tricky with, you know, ever since I quit my day job of working at a coffee shop to doing comics and illustration full time.
And was that when you moved to Portland?
No, this was actually, I was still living in New York when I was able to stop serving people coffee. I've been trying to, like, work on it, chipping away, you know, but it's frustrating because I don't really, doesn't pay the bills as much as other things might. So, you know, it seems like every month, you know, I'm just kind of scrambling to figure out how to pay my rent, you know, with doing comics and things. So, Pop Gun War kind of gets pushed to the background, but I don't know. I got a new schedule worked out, and hopefully I can kind of make the Marvel money last a little bit and finish up this book. I have like about 40 pages finished, and it's 160 pages, so it doesn't sound like, you know, much, but you know, I feel like I'm kind of in the home stretch, even though it's only a fourth of the way done.
Now, Pop Gun War, it's probably your most personal work, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. Sure.
Does it kind of, like, does it take a lot to put into it to kind of develop it? Or is it more organic for you than that?
Yeah, it's probably, more organic, I guess. It's, Pop Gun War never really feels forced to me. Like, I don't know if it's because of, like, the dreamlike quality of it or what, but I'm not, I never really stress out about the story, like getting, you know, conveying ideas. Occasionally, like dialogue and things like that, it's a little more difficult, but it's mostly just like, this is what I want to draw, so I'm going to do a story about it. the project that I'm working on for after Pop Gun War, like I put a pitch together and showing it around to some people to try to get some, like, publishers interested. That's been really difficult, writing that. I don't know why. It's, you know, kind of similar things. It's more like science fiction fantasy, I guess, than even the Poppin' War is. It's like a post-apocalyptic epic story. But that, trying to tie all the ideas that I wanted to put in that book together has been pretty rough.
Now, the next Meat House book that's coming out, I guess, is being put together by Brandon Graham. And what kind of story can we expect from you in that one? Because I'm presuming you'll have something in it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, like the same thing. It's actually I used it in the pitch, like the it's like maybe like a foreword to the book. It's just these two kids that have swords and kill elves, like these weird demon elf creatures. Like these two kids out in the woods, and they find this like magical cave that they go into, and there's like a not a nice person living in the cave, and he tries to, I guess, like steal their souls or something, and so they have to kind of fight back. But by doing it, they're sort of like opening themselves up to this like other world, you know, like these. Well, I'm telling you the whole story. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
It's like a 15-page story, full color. The whole book's going to be full color.
Is it?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I know.
The store in Los Angeles, Meltdown, they're going to be publishing it.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. Chris McDonald's also, you know, one of the editors on that book. He's pretty heavily involved.
Because I know when...
all the artists and stuff.
When I bring it up around Brandon, it gets kind of awkward, so...
That's probably because he hasn't finished his pages yet.
Yeah, I know. So everyone, go to the Comics and Stories and ask Brandon what's up with that. Because, you know, he doesn't put out enough comics as it is.
Yeah, guy's, like, right.
So disgustingly prolific.
Yeah, juggernaut.
Now, a lot of your stories, there seems to be a certain aspect, I guess, of loneliness, I see, especially in the Meat House stories, where it's kind of like people watching and stuff. Is that something that you kind of like exercise through the comics?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I like a lot of times being in public, but I don't like interacting with the public as much, you know, like, it's kind of fun to, like, watch people and, you know, try to figure out, like, oh, what is that person all about? Like, where did that person come from? And, there's a character in you know, couple of my Meat House stories that is basically a direct, you know, pull from, like, a dude that would come into the coffee shop I worked at. Like, he was this really odd guy who was missing some fingers and kind of always ordered the same thing. And I think one of the guys that worked there, we were such jerks when we worked there, he just kicked him out one day so he got sick of him. And he would just kind of stand by the door and, like, look inside, like, really forlorn.
Aww.
It's just sad. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of the, you know, like, working there and, you know, living in New York and stuff, like, I just see so many, like, weird, colorful characters. Like, oh, man, I gotta do a story about that guy. It's just like, what does he go? Like, what does he do at night? You know, like, you know, it's kind of interesting to me. Like, I don't really want to talk to him necessarily, but...
You just want to know more about him.
Yeah. If he had, like, a TV show about his life, I'd totally watch it. I don't... Like, talking to the guy himself, he's like, whoa, I need to get out of here right now. I have to get as far away from this guy as possible.
Now, one thing I've noticed is you've won the were awarded the very prestigious gold medal from the Society of Illustrators.
Yes.
And they don't do that for regular comics folk, maybe like, you know, New Yorker comics folk, but not
well,
regular.
When I did it, it was the first year they actually had a cartooning or a comic book category.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think I kind of won. Well, maybe part of the reason I won was because it was brand new and not a lot of people knew about it. So I was like, because I'd interned at the Society of Illustrators, and when I was going to school at SVA, it was like a big deal. You know, they had like a, I guess the school had like a good relationship, and that might have had something to do with the fact that, you know, we seemed like almost every year it was like, SVA would like get all most of the prize money and stuff. And, I heard they were doing a comic book category, and I was like, well, I'll put, you know, first issue of Popcorn War in there, see what happens. And Yeah, I got
that. Nothing to cough at.
Very, very amazingly, pleasantly surprised that I won. And yeah, it seems really weird to me now because I don't really enter a lot of contests and things like that.
What did you do the night you found out you won?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember. I probably just was like, yeah, cool. Whatever I normally do.
Now,
it wasn't like, I mean, it was a huge deal in one sense, I guess, just because I, you know, everyone likes approval. You know, it's nice to have people say they like your stuff. But as far as like, you know, helping my career or anything like that, something like that doesn't really matter. You know, if you're a cartoonist or doing comic books and stuff, I don't really know how many people pay attention to things like that.
Yeah.
It's probably more just like picking it up and be like, this looks good.
Yeah, I find the whole award system for most comics to be pretty, I don't know, incestuous?
That's a good word.
Maybe a popularity club, I don't know. But it's that doesn't really reflect what is out there. But maybe I am bitter and jaded. We'll leave it at that. Well, we're nearing the end of our time, so I want to thank you for taking the hour aside to hang out with us and chat about Pop Gun War, Meat House, and Omega the Unknown.
Yeah, thank you, man. That was awesome. It was fun.
And,
first radio show ever.
Really? Yeah. We do that for a lot of people, it turns out.
Wait, actually, okay, I totally lied. I did a one in Ohio, like, a long time ago.
Ohio?
What's in Ohio?
Well, I had some friends out there, and one of the guys had me out for a book signing at the bookstore he worked at, and I set up a radio interview that I think my cell phone went off during. So that was, I felt kind of bad about that.
It happens. I think I've had that happen before in the studio with people's cell phone. My cell phone's gone off, but I don't answer it. In fact, when you listen to that from Brunetti interview, he's in the office and you can, we have to take a musical break because his boss comes by, I think. So we will see you then in a week and a half, and I hope everyone goes down to check out Farrell. Thanks, Farrell.
Thank you.
And have a good day.
Bye.
Bye. Farrell Dalrymple, Pop Gun War, Meat House, and Omega the Unknown, and plenty of other good stuff. You can check out his work at what comic stores, Jordan?
Lucky's, RX, and probably the comic store.
On 4th. Yeah. And maybe Sophia's.
Probably Sophia's.
Sophia's. Other than that, don't bother. we're talking about the Comics and Stories convention, and that's a great chance to check out a lot of small press people in Vancouver putting out their stuff. You're going to have something new for it, I understand.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just really excited to see everyone who's going to show up. It looks like a really good group of people this year.
It's a good community. It's a chance to check out stuff. Like, people come from out of town. There's a lot of people. Like, we're talking about Farrell's coming up. Brandon's coming up. Corey Lewis will be there. And I think it'll be good. It's going to be fun.
Lots of shits and giggles.
Like I said, next week I'm very excited. Chris Ware, Cheat here. We're going to be talking about some good stuff. And you should listen to it. Gasoline Alley is one of the best comic strips of all time. And it's still running to this day for over 80-some-odd years. Nearly 90. Probably 90. Close to 90. Yeah, we'll find out in a week. Same Inkstead time. Same Inkstead channel. Don't forget, up next is we got Crimes and Treasons. What? Right? Yeah. Jordan's just nodding and shaking her head. Okay. I'm going to end with the last song that from Mr. Dalrymple's selection. Why do I say Mr. from Farrell's selection?
You have a respect, you know?
I got no respect for no one.
We know that's a lie.
Two Black Lanes by Sailboats. I hope you enjoy. Up next, Crimes and Treasons. Y'all keep rocking.
My whole world is nothing but two black lanes. might explode. Eyes fixed tight on the horizon, straight through the morning to the afternoon, but sometime soon, like a helium balloon, I'll let it go.